this is the difference between a living being and a non-living thing. If a living thing has the higher nature of animals, it can also move, again, locomotion. It can know, it has cognitive faculties, the senses, and it can pursue the objects of its appetites. Yes, it has concupiscible and irascible appetites, just like we do. Now, man, as a rational animal, has all that, but we also have the higher faculties of intellect and will in addition to all that. In the higher gradations of life, immanent activity takes on a nobler character. But whether man is exercising the powers common to lower life forms or those requiring the use of his mind, man's life, his anima, which is also the word for soul in Latin, it means both life and soul. This is the principle of all of his immanent activity of a higher or lower order. So it happens that the superior nature of his immanent activity puts man at the pinnacle of material creation. Now, all of this is, I'm talking about life, I'm defining life, and I'm explaining what this definition of life means. Because when we get into the concept of secondary causality, it's important to understand that, yeah, we didn't cause ourselves. Okay, we don't come from ourselves. We come from God. And we're radically dependent upon God. Yet, we're capable as living beings of immanent activity. We're not robots. Okay, so somebody could say, well, you know what? Brother Francis could have been deceived. And there could have been one of these, this is sort of anachronistic because this is decades ago, but there could have been one of these drones, you know, that's these little bitty drones that's like the size of a bird, you know, and it could have been, you know, the CIA putting out a hit on somebody using a sparrow drone. And the sparrow drone can equally fly against the wind, just as the real sparrow could, because after all, it's self-propelled. It's got some sort of fuel or whatever in it, some way of moving, but it's being controlled from outside. Well, the reply to that is, yeah, you know, you could be deceived by something that is a counterfeit that resembles something truly alive, but it's cheating in the sense that it's not immanent activity, because the capacity for motion isn't in the thing. It was put in from outside. So it's been put there by craft, by artifice, by technology, and that's not immanent activity. The activity was all put in it from outside, and that's not the same thing as God creating something that is living, that is capable of its own intrinsic power to do things. It's the intelligence and the agency of the maker, huh, or the operator that makes this thing go. It's not a power that's intrinsic to it. That's just a sort of a reply to the persnickety people out there who might make a ridiculous objection. Not that those people would listen to my show anyway. Reset. You're listening to Reconquest and the Crusade Premium Channel, part of Veritas Radio Network, and we're talking about causality and salvation. So yes, a bird is a material object. Yes, it can be blown about. It can undergo transient action, and we as humans can undergo transient action, right? I can be thrown out of a window, right? Just like a rock can, huh? But the rock can't attempt to grab onto something on the way down, right? I can. Now it would be clumsy and pathetic, but still, I'm capable of immanent activity. I can scream out lots of things as I'm falling, right? A rock can't, right? I can use my mind. I can make an act of contrition as I'm going down in the hopes that this will prepare me to meet my judge should that fall be mortal. All right, moving right along. Even though living beings are capable of immanent activity, and man specifically is capable of the elevated activities of thinking and willing, it remains true that all that is not God is radically dependent upon God. For such is the very notion of our creatureliness. God not only created all that is, he also sustains it all in existence. Yet, does it not remain true that the immanent activity of living things on earth that this is really and truly their act, something proper to them that they actually do. Yes, it does remain true. So the bird flying, huh? The man walking, the man thinking, the poet writing poetry. These are things that are proper to man. It's not something, yeah, I mean, it might be impressive. But now if a bird started doing poetry, then you'd say, wow, that's a miracle, right? But a man doing poetry, that's not a miracle. That's something proper to man because he has the function of reason. It's proper to him to use language articulately and intelligently is a property of man. It's something that man is capable of. And the natural sort of simulacra, you know, like a parrot parroting a man. Well, that's kind of the exception that proves the rule, because that's it might resemble articulate speech. It's just an amazing capacity for imitation that these creatures have. God built it into them. It's impressive. But it's not a miracle, and they don't have any intelligence. They don't know what it means. And the proof there is that they're not going to formulate original sentences using their quote-unquote vocabulary, because they don't, okay? They don't have intelligence. They have something that vaguely resembles it because they can imitate things that humans teach them. All right, so those things that are done, those acts that are proper, whether it's to a bird or to a man or to a dog or to a cat, they really are the acts of those living things. God didn't make a bunch of robots that he's just sort of spinning around and controlling like some big kid up in the sky with this sort of, village with his train set, you know, and all this elaborate stuff that he made. God isn't just some big kid playing with stuff. He made things which have the capacity for imminent activity, something we can't do, right? We can't make men. We can't make intelligent beings. We can't make life. We cannot make life in a laboratory. It's impossible. God is the author of life, and we have never learned how to do this, and we never will learn how to make life. Doesn't matter how many, you know, amino acids and proteins we manage to string together, we're not going to make life. Where does that take us? So there is this concept of living beings truly having the capacity to engage in imminent activity, to cause, to make, to do on their own. Yet, God is the first cause still, isn't he, right? And we can't take him out of the picture, because as soon as we take the first cause out of the picture, the second causes disappear. They're no longer causes of anything. And God sustains us in existence. Our secondary causality ceases immediately if the first cause no longer sustains it. Huh? So this is something that God wants to do. He wants to make a creation where these living things have this imminent activity, aside from the laws of nature, aside from the laws of thermodynamics, you know, the law of entropy, various physical laws, the law of gas diffusion, all this stuff, the kinds of things that are measurable and quantifiable and scientifically verifiable. Aside from all that, gravity and such, there are living things, because all that I said pertains to inanimate things, but there are living things which have themselves the capacity to act, to do, on their own, not on their own as in a sense of divorce from the first cause, but by this power of imminent activity. They can do this thing, huh? And they're not little robots. They're not little droids. They're not little, model airplanes, right? They actually have this capacity that is proper to them as living beings, possessed of that particular nature that they have, whether it's bird nature or dog nature or human nature. Okay, so we see things all the time in this realm of causality, even again among inanimate things. So, you know, as well as living things. So we can consider an oak tree reaching towards the sky. It assimilates water, nutrients from the soil and the sunlight. Or we can consider the bee making honey or wax, or the man plying his trade, whatever trade that might be. He might be a farrier, you know, making horseshoes. He might be a shoemaker for men. Or he might be a poet or a literary guy or a journalist. He's using a power that's intrinsic to himself. But in all of its grand totality, creation is first the work of God. He's the first cause. Yet he willingly and purposely operates through secondary causes all the time. Rain may drop from the heavens, by which I mean the sky, but it does so following laws of nature that are measurable. There's a cycle dependent upon the stable natures of things by which water is evaporated, it becomes clouds, and then eventually returns to the thirsty ground or to the various aquatic surfaces of the earth, rivers and streams and oceans and seas and lakes and so forth. And it follows this sort of scientifically observable, predictable pattern of this stuff happening. Mind you, it's terribly complex, and meteorologists often get it wrong when they try to predict the weather. But still, it's according to a certain order that's observable. We can truly say that God makes it rain, just as he sustains all of this and gave the water and the sun and the atmosphere, etc., their natures by which these activities occur. But there is a genuine causality in these created things, and that can't be denied. It's observable. And it's not a mere phantasm. This is what we call secondary causality. A secondary cause is defined by Father Vollner, German Jesuit, as, quote, a cause under and dependent upon the first cause.